Welcome to A Bit of Insight with Lisa Mosby, your weekly dose of health, wealth, and everything else. And today I have an amazing guest who has been through some serious challenges, and yet she's a full-time mom. So grab your coffee, and I'm going to introduce our guest, Erica Greeny. She's a female-focused advisor, and she offers securities and advisory services through LPL Financial, which is one of the largest, if not the largest brokerage firm, independent brokerage firm in the country. She's a registered investment advisor, and Erica is a mother of three children and works full-time. So today we're going to chat about financial resiliency for us. What does our financial future look like? How do we become resilient and prepare for inflation, loss of jobs, you know, the pandemics, things of that nature? How do we prepare for that so there's always funds available to us? And what is it like to work away from your children? How do we make time for our customers? How do we make time for our children and get it all to be cohesive and still sleep, with which both of us are struggling with at the moment? So welcome, Erica. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much, Lisa. It's great to be here.
Yeah, my pleasure. I gave a little bit of an introduction, but you've been through some tough times since the pandemic and getting back into the workforce. And I would love for you to kind of introduce your story about how resilient you have been. Like, what have you had to do to come out of the pandemic and still be self-employed and run your own business?
Yeah. So obviously the pandemic was hard for everybody, but especially for, you know, those of us that have had young children. So up until the time the pandemic started, I was a stay-at-home mom. And then, you know, shortly after that, kind of started rejoining the workforce. Well, right after that happened, my daughter was diagnosed with leukemia, and that was late in 2021. So still in the end of the pandemic, but still kind of not, you know, something any parent wants to hear, not financially prepared for a diagnosis like that. The prospect was essentially that I would be taking 2 years away from my job. And I just wasn't in a financial spot where that was going to be possible for our family. So I actually, you know, through good healthcare and good support, was able to continue working. But I did meet a lot of other families that weren't as fortunate. A lot of them had to drain their retirement funds, sell their homes just to pay for care for their children. So it really was eye-opening to be in that experience. And that's why I choose to serve women, because we often carry more of the emotional load of what that looks like. We're the consumers, we're the people that make sure the household runs. So it really speaks to what women go through in that moment when we look at our kids being affected by something so serious. It did open my eyes up to other struggles that people go through, you know, as females, like divorce, being widowed, and just not having the financial literacy to navigate those situations in a way that serves them well. So,
you know, diving into that and knowing that, having that in your background, I'm sure it allows you to ask the hard questions. Like, when people know your story, women can sit with you and say, this is where we're at. Like, we don't have enough. I have three kids or two kids, or I have four kids starting college, you know, consecutively going to college, and I don't have enough. Like, I'm sure that people feel comfortable. Like, you have this ability to connect with folks because you've been there. You've walked through the fire, and you know what it takes to help to set them up to become more resilient. What do you think that the most common financial challenges are for the women that you've been seeing? Like, yours was an illness, but I'm sure that there's a vast majority of other things that women experience, and we might be able to relate to some of our viewers. Are you going through this, this, and this? These are the problems that I've been seeing. Can you shed some light on some of those common financial challenges that you see among the women that you advise?
Yeah, I'd say the two biggest ones are lack of confidence, and that pairs with lack of education. So obviously they don't teach this in school. The only way you really learn it is if you go out and find the information, or you have someone like myself that works from an education first background. A lot of females will tell me, you know, they've worked with advisors in the past, and they've either talked over their head, or when they've asked questions, simply left them with It's too complicated for you to understand. And that's not really a fair way to, deal with finances. You really need to know what your investment strategy is. You really need to know that the person that you're having help you with that has a strategic plan and that you're aware of what each of those steps, products, investments are doing for you personally to meet your goals, not in a, I don't have to break down every product into like, here's what it does and here's how this, but how we're going to use that product or how we're going to use that investment to achieve something is more important than those small questions. But I'm still willing to back up and give as much information as they'd like in order for them to feel informed and comfortable, whereas that may not have always been their experience. And the lack of confidence part, I think that's just, men have primarily been the breadwinners in the past. That's vastly changing in the workforce right now. Women are becoming the breadwinners. I do, have many couples that I work with where the dads are stay-at-home dads. So just kind of navigating that, like, if he's taking care of the finances, but you're bringing in all the money, it's really important for you to know where all of it's going and how it all works, and not just leave that up to him. And that actually in itself instills a lot of confidence. But if you've never done it, and if you're just hesitating to try or to reach out to get the information, obviously the unknown is always scarier than the known, right?
Yeah, and she's act you're actually speaking to me. I'm just going to say, I was with my husband for 29 years, and though I did the accounting and I got all the stuff to the tax company, and we were always self-employed, we were always entrepreneurs, so I was part of the business, but I was doing the accounting, I wasn't doing the investing. And there is a huge difference. Like, you might be paying the bills, you might be seeing the money coming in, you might be creating the budget, but are you watching the investments? And I didn't. And then I woke up after 29 years of marriage and found out I'm not going to be married anymore. And what do I do with my retirement? How do I continue to plan for that? Where are my investments? What do I need to manage and move? And it was like, oh my gosh, I should not be learning this at 50 years old. So that's I do often bring in women financial planners, women who help other women with their financial planning, because I was so shell-shocked, not knowing what to do. And I still don't have a great financial plan. And it's been many years at this point, and I still am not in a great financial position. I have not saved enough. I have not put enough away. And I'm going to be working a lot longer than maybe some other people that are my age, partly by choice, but also by necessity. So I think listening is a big part of what it is that you do. And helping people to get some clarity around their objectives and their goals. And then you get to choose those financial instruments from there. How do you walk through, like, a crisis like mine, or a personal crisis that somebody might be going through from a financial perspective? How do you help people get back on their feet? Is there a tailored step-by-step process that you walk through with people for discovering what they need and, creating a plan for them?
Yeah, absolutely. So just like every person is different, every financial plan is different. It really, the severity of the personal crisis, the amount that they had to take from maybe their investments, their emergency fund, whatever that is, where we really start is just making sure that you have a base so that if we do go forward with investing, you're not having to pull out of those investments. You're able to have kind of a cushion or emergency fund. So that's kind of where we start. And it's really just explaining the importance of that first step, because often I think people want to go to, what's the next thing? What's the retirement account I'm working on, or non-retirement account I'm working on? But that emergency fund does so much for making sure that you stay invested and that your strategy is successful. And that's really something that I drive home with each and every one of my clients. But as far as, tailoring things to where they may be or may not be, that's also something we walk through, even with, some of my widows calling Social Security and seeing what does our benefit structure look like. Just having a handhold through that process when they're already going through like a hard time and they just need someone who is going to be compassionate and empathetic and really stand there and say, I'm here with you through the process. That's that's a lot of what I do. So.
Think a lot of times we don't even know what we don't know. Like, and it's actually, I love that you said, I start with education. Like, I take a look at, I'm going to interview you. I'm going to find, ask the questions. I'm going to learn where you're at. I'm going to, investigate what it is that you do have, and then educate you on what we need. Like, here's your age, and here's what we need, and here's the kind of investments we need. So I think your role as a financial advisor changes. Like you said, every person's situation is unique. Sometimes there's handholding, sometimes there's therapy, sometimes there's education. Can you speak a little bit to that, like defining your role, like diving into that? When we use the word advisor, it can mean so many different things. I'm an entrepreneur advisor, 40 years of business experience, and I can, I've seen a lot of things over that time. So I can walk through with a new business. I can see somebody who's that mid-range or who's actually sold to a Fortune 500 company because I did it. So I know how to do those things. So speaking to your role and explaining kind of what's the difference between a financial advisor, a financial planner, there's a lot of these, a fiduciary is another term that I've seen. Can you help us to have like more of an understanding as women or any investor, who should we be talking to? Where do we start this process?
Yeah. So working with an advisor that either is a fiduciary or works in a fiduciary capacity. So if you're a fiduciary, you have your CFP. So that's another designation that financial professionals get, and that's a certified financial planner. I am not at that point yet, but I do work in a fiduciary capacity. So the difference between those two things is I work on a one fee basis. So that just means that you're just paying one tiered or flat fee, kind of just depending on the situation. That then allows me to give you suitable financial advice. It holds me to the fiduciary standard of not making any unsuitable recommendations, not generating any, sales just for the sake of commission. And I would say that's where more of the older, like, brokerage advisors kind of came in. The difference between all of them is probably very slight. The planning part, though, not everyone chooses to work in that space. And I feel like in order to give adequate recommendations, I do need the full picture of everything that's going on in your financial life. So everything from, your debt, your income, your mortgage, you've got maybe some other business deals that you do outside of just your investments, but there's so many factors that we don't want to make, any recommendation that doesn't make sense with all of the pieces. So that's where I really come from, is collecting them all, putting them in a very streamlined way where it's easy to see why we would plug in some of these additional pieces.
Conceptions that women might have about financial planning.
Yeah, that like they're going to be talked over, or that they're not going to be heard, that they're not it's not going to be understandable to them. Obviously finance is considerably complicated. I'm not going to say that it's not, but there is ways to simplify it where it's understandable with, like, here's what your objective is and here's what we're going to implement in order to reach that. Here's the time frame it's going to take. And just giving clarity around those things is a lot easier. I actually prompt a lot of my couples to have, and individuals too can do this, but to have the conversation of what's a living expense, what's a lifestyle expense, and what's a luxury expense. And that pretty much dulls it down to those three categories. And that's pretty easy for anyone to understand. So if you can sit down with your partner and say, what does that look like for each of us? And you might have some differences and some similarities, but knowing where you're at will get you on the same page a lot quicker. So many of those other things, like knowing exactly how a mutual fund, won't matter as much once we know, like, what we're doing and where we're going.
Sure. That makes total sense. I love. Can you repeat those one more time? What's a living expense, a lifestyle expense, and a luxury expense?
Yep.
Living expense, food, shelter. I get it. What's the difference between the other two, luxury and lifestyle?
Yeah, so lifestyles, like, do you want Starbucks coffee every morning? Do you want to have streaming services? Because, right, those aren't a living expense, those are lifestyle expense. The gym, things like that. So I really, subscriptions is one that comes to mind for me.
Right on, yeah.
But also I look at, like, if you travel. Some people travel for a luxury, like as a pleasure, as a vacation, and some people travel out of necessity. They have family that lives in other states and they have to factor that into their lifestyle expenses because that's important to them. So everyone's, again, looks different, but differentiating where that falls and what you need to afford is a good way to get on the same page about what is and isn't realistic with your budget.
Yeah. And then you allocate percentages proportionate or proportionate to what the needs are for each of those categories. I get it. That makes sense. I might need to do that exercise on my own here. So I don't do Starbucks every day, but I'm sure I have some lifestyle things at my age that I say, I'm wise, I'm old, I'm gonna, I'm not getting rid of that. And how much should I put away for my retirement? Could you share? It's like I laugh and I'm laughing at me, not at the process and not at what other people are going through. It's like, oh, you're just like, it's like nails on a chalkboard when I talk with some financial planners, because I know where my gaps are. I know where I'm, maybe spending it, and I could roll back in a little bit. And I want the lifestyle that I want, and I just need to figure out how to make more money to afford that. So, could you share a success story where you helped a client transform their financial situation after a crisis? We can't use me yet, but I'm sure that there is somebody in your repertoire that you can say, like, here's what we did, and here's how we turned it around. Like, what kind of walk us through a little bit of a process pre and post crisis and what that could look like.
I had a client in a semi-similar situation to me. They had some premature born children. So that took a huge hit. They were, hospitalized for many months. So medical debt is a real problem, and they wanted to, try and keep up on that as much as they could, and that really set them back with their retirement. And just giving them, reinstilling the confidence is really the biggest thing of, even though we had this setback, we have to look forward. We can't just stay in that like mindset of, well, this happened and now I can't do it because of my unfortunate circumstance. speaking from my own experience, obviously, there was times that it felt that way, and I'm not going to say that it didn't. And so I think I'm really able to come at that from a very like empathetic place, and just really reason with, them as far as what is it going to take. It might take a little bit more because we were delayed by that hurdle, but nothing is saying that it's unachievable. It's just, how much do you want to, move around some of these expenses? Maybe you want to make your living expenses less. Maybe you want to make your lifestyle expenses less, and really just be aggressive with your savings goals so you can live that retirement that you are dreaming of. And maybe it's just getting by. Maybe it's just getting into retirement and having that, base level of funds so everything that you need is covered. And then some people do still work, and a lot of the times I encourage that because the decline that you see when people retire and they don't have a purpose and a reason to wake up in the morning, there's nothing wrong with that. And I think people often get under that misconception of, well, if I get to my 60s, if I'm 65, I should be retired. It doesn't necessarily mean that that's for everyone. It's not something I suggest for everyone. And I think there's, pros and cons to whatever route you choose. It's just having that conversation of, how are we going to move forward, knowing that we're going to leave that situation behind. We're going to talk about it. We're going to digest it, but then we're going to be like, what's our game plan moving forward? And just be really enthusiastic about what that looks like for us. And it's easier, like I said, when you have an end goal in mind, whatever that goal may be, but we have to discover that first and what that looks like for you in order for me to make the right recommendations for you.
Yeah. I call it getting naked with my numbers. It's like you got to be brutally honest. You write them down. Here's where you're spending. Here's what the clothes budget is. Here's what the coffee, but oh, yeah. And housing too. That's less than all the other ones put together, but it shouldn't be. I joke about that, but there is some truth to that. Until you can get naked with your numbers and actually look at your own budget and look at your expenditures and write down everything that comes in and everything that comes out and, kind of like face the reality of it. I think that for me was where my confidence went. Like, I didn't want to be that vulnerable with anybody. And certainly not with myself, like not face the truth, not face the consequences of the lifestyle. And so how do we bring back the confidence? You know, like we have to tear off the band-aid, ladies. You know, I know I had to do it. And if you're in this similar situation, if you are not optimally functioning where you want to be financially, whether it's on a day-to-day basis or looking to the future, you got to rip off the band-aid. You got to get naked with the numbers. You got to be brutally honest and say, here's what's coming in and here's what's going out. And then we create the plan, and that's where the confidence comes. Like, I know I need to put around X number of dollars a month away, and I know that I need to keep my living expenses under X number of dollars. So if I want to forego, you know, going out to eat and those luxuries, I'm going to buy a new outfit this month. So like there's that. It's flexible, but this is the flexible account. Like, that's your luxury account. That's the flexible account. You can't do all the things, but what can you do for that amount? And I think sometimes we just sweep it under the rug and we don't think about it. We don't want to talk about it. How do we start to pull or push or, you know, attract people out of their shell, out of their, like, you know, cocoon of not wanting to face the truth about this? Give me some tips, or share some with our audience on how they can really step into being confident and getting naked with their numbers so that they can change their future and build out that financial success, that financial freedom.
So it's a lot of it is unpacking those beliefs, because if you really think about it, everything you think comes from some outside source. And really getting in tune with your internal voice of you can do it. But when the rhetoric for so long has been that women are the consumers, women are the spenders, women are the ones that, you know, the paycheck comes in and it's gone the next day. And it's because we've always taken on that role of the person who either is the mom and making sure that the groceries are planned for, that we have household cleaning supplies, that our kids have clothes and shoes and things like that. So it's not necessarily that we've been, you know, these exuberant spenders in the large sense. Like, not a lot of that is spent on us, right? It's spent on our household and making sure that it runs effectively. So going back to that and being like, okay, you say your wife is a spender. What is she spending money on? And when we really break that down and be like, oh, a lot of this is household expenses. A lot of these things make our household run easier and better and make a lot of sense. Then they kind of are like, oh, okay, you know, I understand that. A lot of the reason why I really got passionate about helping women is a while back I read a book and it said, if you Google financial advising or financial advice for women, what comes up is budgeting or how to make cheaper meals or, you know, how to save money on household supplies, like making your own, for example. Whereas, like, if you were to Google financial advice for men, it's investing in real estate and starting a business and things like that. So, just the astronomical difference between those two roles, we still see that played out today. And part of that too, that I like to express is women weren't able to open their own bank account until the 1970s. So that's really only 50 years ago, whereas men never had that issue. So we're catching up on a lot of generational education. And again, I'm really not sure why we don't teach this in schools. I think that would be extremely beneficial. But I know for myself, it really was just like, here's how a broad, you know, picture of how the economy works, and here's how to balance a checkbook. Well, obviously, checkbooks are kind of a thing of the past. So that's not really something that's considerable in this day and age. So really coming from, okay, where are we looking at you know, our expenses? Where are we breaking that down? And a lot of people, it's in an app now, right? So you have your bank account app and you're seeing, here's my inflow and here's what my spending is for the month. What we're really looking at is what's left over after all of that is done, and where can we cut those costs as a whole, as a family, and working together in that sense, which is why I don't have meetings just individually with men or women without the other partner there, because it is so important to be on the same page, and you're never going to have that conversation unless you have that conversation. So I just getting everyone in the same room and being like, this is where we're at, this is what our goals are, but like, here's the, again, the facts of where we are, Once you have that confidence of, oh, my husband understands that a lot of the things that, or a lot of the income we're bringing in is going towards household expenses and the children and making sure all of these things are taken care of, it looks less to him like we're just frivolously spending and more like, here's the reality of the situation. Do you want toilet paper or no? So that's kind of where we end up.
We don't have that communication about finances. That's when marriages get in trouble because nobody knows the truth. Nobody knows the numbers. Nobody knows the facts. We're sowing things on both sides of the fence. You go out to lunch every day with all of your business people or whatever. If you're a stay-at-home mom or, and he's looking at, oh, you're buying, boots and clothes and you shop, you spend $150 at Target again. And why is there an Amazon bill for $300? Well, we need books and, all the supplies for school and winter coats to stand at the bus stop. So, yeah, just seeing that whole picture. And we do because we live so much away from each other, just on a day-to-day basis, when we're at work or at home or both people at work, we don't know. We don't know what's happening over there. We don't understand the expenses that are happening. That car needed oil changes and new spark plugs and a tire. We had a flat tire. Sometimes you talk about it, sometimes you just take care of it and get the job done. And then somebody sees the bill later going, what? So, the communication piece of it in every marriage, and especially about finances, we talk about raising the kids, we talk about where we're going to live, we talk about where we're going to go on vacation, but we don't always talk about the budget and how we're going to pay for all of that. So, I love what you're sharing with us. I want to shift gears. We've been going at this for a little bit of time. I hope that we've inspired the viewers to reach out, talk to a financial planner, get in touch with Erica if you want to, have a sit down with her just to assess the situation, see if you're a good fit, and she can be a support person for you. But I want to shift in a little bit. We have a lot of entrepreneurs. My audience is primarily women entrepreneurs. Many of them will have kids or grandkids at home. How do we, let's talk about balance. And I don't believe that there is such a thing as balance. I think our attention, our energy goes to where it needs to go, and then we shift and we move that around. I don't think that it's like ever equal on both sides. I think it's always like a more like a scale where it's ebbing and flowing. And you've gone through some pretty tough stuff in the last couple of years and been a business owner. So how do you find an ability to manage all that? And I'm not going to use the word balance because I think it's far overused and it doesn't really exist. How do you keep the flow going? How do you keep your sanity, your self-care, and still be of service to your family?
Yeah. Whether you're an entrepreneur that has a family or not, both times it's important to block off your time and take time for yourself, for something you enjoy, for something that inspires you, because you'll lose sight of why you started a business in the first place, which was for a lot of reasons, but primarily, I guess, speaking for myself, for flexibility. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs share that. And if you're not providing yourself that flexibility, it just doesn't make a lot of sense to be putting as much time and effort as you do into being an entrepreneur. So when I speak with women that are in the entrepreneurial space, probably their biggest thing is just, how do I manage my schedule, my finances, my family? And that's kind of, the conversation we have. My part in that, being a financial planner, is making my part as boring as possible, so it takes as little upfront effort from you. I am an automatic payment girly. I just want everything to go where it's supposed to go, into the buckets, and then I'll deal sift through what's left. But I think setting up those parts within your business where we can automate things or make things as easy as they can be on a day-to-day, schedule, looking at like a time audit, like how much time am I spending doing each of these things daily, and where can I cut that down so you can really focus on the parts of the business that need your attention. That's what has been the most beneficial to me as an entrepreneur, is just knowing where's my time going and then shutting it off. Like if I have a hard stop at 4 p.m. because my daughter has dance or gymnastics or whatever it may be, being done and just saying nothing is on fire and it will be there tomorrow. If it is on fire, I might have to say, hey, I have, this going on. I will take care of this yet this evening. And that might have to be an after bedtime situation that I'm taking care of it. But you're right, there is no quote unquote balance. It's just more of, how can I honor myself in this, and how can I also honor the service I want to bring to, my clients?
And make sure your kids have enough time. Like,
Yeah.
yeah, we move it apart. And for me, I'm not a fan of the word budget. I never liked it. But I
Yeah.
think we budget our time just like we budget our money. It's like, where's the important things this week? And it changes. What's important at 9 a.m. is different than what's important at 9 p.m. Both are important, but it's allocating that and budgeting that time and making sure it's scheduled. And it's, scheduling date night is going to keep your marriage alive, right? If we don't ever have dates after we get married and have kids, like we see things, you start to spread apart like that. So scheduling that time to go to your kids' events and being there for them so that they feel seen and heard and loved, as Oprah says. So I love that. Thank you for sharing that. Any final messages that you have for women who might be feeling overwhelmed by their financial situation or their financial future as they look to the future?
Yeah. So I think the biggest thing is just to start where you are. I always think in experience, just the conversations that I have are I have to be at this certain point or this certain dollar amount or this certain year into my business. And that's just not the case. We should be making goals throughout that time, even if they're smaller goals, and in the anticipation that we can grow that. But it's the habit, right? So it's the making sure that that automatic withdrawal goes into my retirement fund monthly, even if it's not as much as I want it to be when I start out. That's the conversations your financial advisor would be having with you. And that's kind of the value we should bring is like, hey, we've been doing $50. What does $100 feel like? Has 50 been comfortable? Because like we want you to be slightly uncomfortable. We want you to like still feel like you can have everything, taken care of at home as far as living expenses and making sure you're good to go. But like on the saving side, you should feel a little bit like, okay, maybe I'm not gonna get that Starbucks coffee this morning. Maybe I'm gonna think about the fact that my withdrawal is going to go into my retirement account tomorrow. But once you build that habit and it's consistent, it's a lot easier to stick with, especially when you see how easy it is to not have to write a check or bring in money somewhere like at the bank. You can just literally have it set up so that it's taken out the same date every month, just like every one of your bills. It's like a bill you pay to your future self. And I think just that alone gives you such a peace of mind that even throughout the struggle and even throughout the imbalance, you're still doing what's best for yourself, even if it's a small amount right now.
Beautiful. The last question I'll ask is, how do we stay informed to ensure that the advice that we're getting remains relevant, impactful? How often do we reassess that financial situation? How do we stay plugged in? Because sometimes we, I do have automatic payments going, to different places, and so I don't always check them. And see what's happening with it. I don't always check to see if my accounts are growing or if the market's pulled back. You see it on TV and you go, market pullback. Should I actually check and look? Or maybe I won't look this month because the market pulled back and I'll check next month. So how do we stay relevant? How do we stay informed? Do you have any tips or tricks on that or a place that
Yeah.
people can plug in with you to stay educated and informed?
So, two sides to that. If you're being self-direct, if you're making these accounts by yourself and managing them, which is completely possible, anyone can start a brokerage account and invest in a multitude of things that would still help them get to their end goal. That part is a little bit more hands-on. You would have to be making sure that you're kind of looking at those things and keeping up with that. If you're working with a financial professional, though, I think the biggest value you get from that is that they should be asking you those questions. They should be checking in with you and being like, hey, here's where we're at. For me personally, that looks like quarterly letters or quarterly emails, and then follow-ups are, biannually and annually. And then we just kind of have a conversation about how far away we are from those goals. Do we need to increase what we're doing? Do we need to anticipate an expense that's coming up that you might need to use some of your funds for? It should be the advisor's job. If you're paying an advisor, if you're working with a fiduciary, which is what I would suggest for all women, It just gives you, again, that peace of mind, that confidence that they can't make any unsuitable recommendations, that everything they're doing is in your best interests. It's the duty to put your client's interests above your own is essentially what a fiduciary is. And being able to work in that capacity with someone, if they're not giving you that, like, hey, let's have this conversation, and if this is where you want to be, we're going to have to turn it up a little bit. That's what they should be doing, is having those conversations that otherwise you would be having with yourself or your spouse.
Beautiful. Well, I know I took away a lot from this conversation. The big three for me were look at those budget items, living, lifestyle, luxury, and make sure that the allocation is where I want it to be. And then putting that difference away into retirement accounts or tithing funds or wherever it is that you feel that you're lacking, wherever you have a gap. So that was my greatest takeaway. I'm sure it'll be different for other folks. Where do people find you if they want to get in touch with you?
Yeah, so I can be reached by email at egreeny@lakeshoregroupwm.com or on LinkedIn if you are out there as a business owner. LinkedIn's become more of a social platform as well, but I can be reached on there. It's just Erica Greeny, and the last name is Green, like the color EY.
And that'll also be in the show notes for those of you who are looking for it. You can reach out to me directly too if you can't find either of those spots to connect. Thanks so much for tuning in. I hope you had a takeaway. I hope we inspired you to maybe go look at that statement next time it comes in. Don't just throw it in the drawer. Open it up. See what it looks like in your accounts. Maybe you don't have a statement because you haven't put anything away for retirement. Wherever you are on the playing field, whether you have plenty and you're already set for life or you're just getting started, reach out and get support. It's important to get connected and get help with this. Don't bury your head in the sand. I speak from experience. Don't do what I do. Do what my guests tell you to do because they're experienced, talented, gifted, and they'll treat you kindly and make sure that you're set for the future. So come on back next week. Can't tell you what we're talking about because I'm not really sure at the top of my head. But if you need some help with your social media, you can reach out to me at lisamosby.com, and that's Lisa MOSBEY.com, and book an appointment with me. We'll talk about your business. We'll talk about your social media. How do we expand your brand and grow that bank account so you have more to invest? Come on back next week, folks. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for joining me on A Bit of Insight. To get more involved with our wellness community, grab a copy of my book, Live Well, Travel Far, or to explore our travel offerings, visit the website at insightcenterforwellness.com. And if today's episode gave you something to think about, leave a review and please share it with a friend. This is Lisa Mosby reminding you to live well, travel far, and always follow your insight.